Okay, so this is, today is August 4th, 2014. Okay, we start with one time doing homage to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Okay, today we have some guests. This is Dana Murthy. She came from Australia, all the way from Australia, to visit and stay at Twangyan Monastery for 5 weeks. And you know I gave you all the, they call it the crib or the answers. So she is the one who prepared that some months ago.
Fine, it's done.
Yeah. And also she prepared, I sent out the summary of the grammar. She had also prepared that, very systematic. And Sam, I think maybe most of you know Sam, who comes usually on the weekend, but first time he's come to our class. Okay, so now we've finished the review. The review of lessons 1 to 5, so now we're ready to break out into new territory. Are you drinking a coffee?
It's decaf, but it's coffee. I'm going to wake up. With decaf.
Does it come in a bigger size?
I think this was the biggest that the woman gave me.
Okay, so let us look at the grammar section first. This is on page, starting on page 83. Now there are several nouns that have come into Pali, have been absorbed into Pali from Vedic Sanskrit. And these nouns end in an. And they form the nominative singular with the long a. And so you have to be careful when you encounter them. And don't conclude that because they are, the nominative has a long a, that they're feminine. They're actually masculine nouns. And the reason that they have the ending in the long A is because the stem termination, A-N, un, turns into the long A in the nominative singular. So an example of this is the noun attan, which would be in Sanskrit, this would be atman. You know, if you've read the Upanishads or the Vedantic philosophy, again and again you read about the Atman, that the aim of spiritual practice is to realize the Atman. And of course, what the Buddha did was to sort of turn the Atman theory on its head with the teaching of non-Atman. But in Pali, Atman is Attan, and the nominative singular is atta, with a long A. And so we see it, if you look at the declension table, you see nominative singular atta, and usually, I mean almost always in my experience, the accusative would be attanung. Maybe attung, I don't recall offhand seeing it, but perhaps it occurs in verse where you have to save a syllable. But the normal prose end form for the accusative singular is attanang. Then we have the genitive dative attano, and then the usual instrumental ablative would be attana. Again, I don't recall seeing it attaina, but there might be instances that occur in verse, maybe for the sake of a meter. Then the vocative is attani, in the self. I don't recall seeing a vocative because nobody speaks to the self.
self.
Well, maybe there are some people who address themselves, but they're usually not walking the streets.
I've seen them.
Yeah, after after Reagan cut federal spending on the mental institutions, there are a lot more on the streets. Okay, then I told you, I think the last class, don't have to worry about the plural, because I don't think it ever occurs in Pali. I don't know why they put that there. I don't think you get ever get the plural of self. And the note says that there's an alternate plural form, attunang, instrumental appetite, atuhi. Actually, I should do a search. It would be interesting to do a search on the Chattisangayana Tripitaka to see if these forms ever occur. Okay, another noun that has the stem ending in an, un, is Brahman. And Brahman in the Buddhist texts, in the suttas, always refers to the god Brahma, or a group of gods who are called Brahmas. We don't find in the Buddhist texts mention of the Brahman of the Upanishads, the impersonal spiritual reality. Okay, so the word Brahman, the stem form Brahman, forms its nominative singular as Brahma. And then we have the vocative singular becomes, for some reason, it becomes Brahme, and the dative genitive becomes Brahmuno. And then we do have the instrumental ablative singular Brahmuna, which to me is more familiar than Brahmana, which I don't recall seeing. But Brahmuna seems to be the common form, the more common form. Dative, genitive, plural. They say Brahmunang along with Brahmanang. But I don't recall offhand the occurrences of dative, genitive plurals. There might be, but I just don't recall them offhand. And according to the notes, some of the forms with Brahman then take, for the N, they have the retroflex N. That's the N with a dot under it, rather than the dental N. But you have to be careful to distinguish the word Brahma from the noun Brahmana. Brahmana is a person belonging to the Brahman class. Okay, then another noun that has the stem in un is the word Rajan, which means king. And we've already come across this word, at least in some of the forms. Here too we have the nominative singular Raja. And the usual accusative is Rajanang. Perhaps there are forms Rajang. And then the usual genitive dative would be run-yo. But one might get rajino or rajasa maybe in later literature or in verse. But the usual form in the suttas is run-yo. Similarly, for instrumental dative, for instrumental ablative, the usual form in the suttas is run-ya. And then locative, it seems to me that the usual one would be run-ye. But the form wouldn't occur very often. In the king.
On the king's head.
What?
Like on the king's head.
That would be using the it would be using the locative for the word head and genitive for king. The head of the king. On the head of the king. And for vocative, we have Maharaja. I think it's with the short A. Yeah, in the selection from, not from the questions of King Melinda, we have the short A, Raja. And then, of course, we have plural forms, because there can be a group of kings. So the nominative, accusative are both Rajano, genitive, dative. I'm not sure which is more frequent, but it seems both are legitimate. Runyang or Rajunung, instrumental ablative. I think you could have either Rajuhi or Rajehi. And then the locative, Rajusu. Okay, any questions on these nouns? You know, some of the forms that are given in this table are very rare, so mainly be able to recognize the nominative and accusative forms. And if you're uncertain about other forms, you can just consult the table. So any questions about this?
Okay.
Venerable Sachinanda?
Yes, and how about the plural one there, Rajano? It is the same like Atta, Attam. So the plural form Muni, right?
Excuse me?
I mean, the singular, you mentioned the Rajanang, Rajang. So the plural form you need to memorize, right?
He's asking in Raja. Since in the one up here, you said we don't need the plural. He's saying, do we not need the plural with Raja?
Oh, no, you need the plural, because sometimes there are references to several kings. And sometimes there are generalizations about kings. Okay, so then let's go on to the next section of the grammar. This is a class of nouns that end with I-N. And we already had these nouns, if you remember, from the Pali Primer. Lily De Silva, Pali Primer. And these nouns can take on, with the I-N ending, can take on either masculine or feminine forms. Now, the reason why or how this kind of noun is constructed, one takes another noun, which is more abstract, and then the ending I-N indicates one who possesses that thing, or one who possesses that quality. 听得懂吗？有一个东西，那个东西有 ，maybe you could explain. There's something that has a particular quality.
就是它有一个性质，然后那个这个是形容说，这个字是形容说有那个性质的东西。
Yeah. Okay, we have some examples. The word hatta means a hand. Now, the noun hattin means that which possesses a hand. But hattin doesn't mean human beings, but it means a special kind of hand.Is something that uses another part of its body like a hand. What uses something else in its body as a hand?
The elephant.
Right, it's the elephant. Because the elephant uses the trunk to pick up objects, to tear objects, to lift and carry objects. And so the elephant is hatin, which means literally,That which possesses a hand. And then, I think he's come just in the nick of time, there's a word paka, which means wing.
You're from that side?
Yeah. There's a word paka, which means wing. And then there's the noun pucking,which means that which has wings, that which possesses wings. And what is it that possesses wings?
Birds.
Right, the bird. No, it's not only a chicken. Other birds too. Don't be so narrow-minded.
He's the good one, she's the good one.
Are you referring to a specific page right now, Bhante?
In the book, it's page 84. Yeah. I'm just trying to think of a few other examples. There's a word boga, which means wealth. And so bogin...is one who possesses wealth, so it's a rich person, it's a bogin. And also boga also means enjoyment, so bogi is one who enjoys things. Okay, then here they give the example of macharin. This is based on the noun macharia, which is an abstract quality. Macharia is miserliness.Or stinginess. And so macharin is a person who has the quality of stinginess. In other words, a miser. There are quite a number of nouns of this.Category that we'll meet in Pali. Okay, so here it shows the declension of this type of noun. So we have the nominative singular. You see what happens with the in ending is that the n drops off and the I is lengthened. But machari...is the masculine form. That would be a miserly man. Can anybody guess what what would be the, how one would express a miserly woman?
Macharini.
Yeah, exactly. So it's macharini. So you keep the I-N and then you add the long I. Macharini.And then the feminine forms will take the long I ending similar to Let's see where we meet them. Similar to the endings for river on page 6. So it would be like macharini, macharining, macharinia. Okay, but here they're just showing the masculine forms. And so we have the nominative singular, machari, the accusative, I guess we could have either form, macharinang, or machering. You see what happens, especially in the commentaries, there's a tendency to assimilate this kind of noun to the normal masculine nouns ending in the I. But I think the more archaic forms would be like, would retain I-N and then add the endings to I-N, like macharinang, macharino, macharina, or macharimha, and macharini. But through assimilation to the normal masculine nouns with the I, we have macharisa, and for accusative, macharing, for genitive, dative, macharisa, and for instrumental, ablative, macharimha. Okay, then you can see the plural forms, macharino or machari, either one. We encounter both. The genitive dative, macharinang, instrumental ablative, macharihi, and locative, macharisu. Any questions about this form? Okay, then we have, now we'll go to section 3. We have, usually it's an adjective, the word mahant, which means great, large, big, da, and da. And so here we have the singular, nominative singular is maha, and the plural could be either maha, mahanto, or mahanta. I think mahanta would tend to be a somewhat later form. In the suttas, it would be either maha or mahanto. And then there's the word santo, which can mean a virtuous person, a good person. And then this has the nominative singular santo and the nominative plural either santo or santa.
How would you differentiate between santo being singular and santo being plural?
Just from the context, one would see that there would be some other word which indicates that a plural is needed, and another context that a singular is needed. It could be the verb, it could be an adjective. They have a note which is an important point. They say that originally the sant is the present participle of the verb ati, which means to exist or to be. And so sometimes santo can be used as a present participle, meaning something is in existence, something is present. So you have to judge from the context whether it means something present, existing, or someone who is good or virtuous. But it's usually very easy to distinguish from the context. Okay, then we have a form of address, which was, it seems it was originally used mainly by the Brahmins. It's bhavant, it's a kind of polite and respectful form of address. They give it as venerable, but bhavant is not what is used in addressing a monk, or at least it's not what the Buddhas use. Though the Brahmins speak about the Buddha, for example, as when they're using the third person as bhavang gotamo, or the vocative for bhavang is bo. So if a Brahmin is speaking to the Buddha, he'll call him bo gotama. So it's something like honorable or respected, but it's not the same as like when we speak about a venerable monk. That word is ayasma, which I don't think we've come across it yet, but we'll come across it. Oh, and then they say the vocative address form, they say Bhante from Bhavang. They say the vocative address form, Bhante, with which we are familiar, is actually a related form and appears to have been borrowed from a different dialect. I'm not sure that I agree with this. I think Bhante is from Vedanta. May I see this book, the dictionary? Well, the dictionary says that Bhante could correspond either to bhavanta, which would be this word, or to a Pali word, bhadanta. Bhadanta is a respectful form of address, meaning bhante. Well, meaning something like venerable one, esteemed one. And then they give the table showing the most common forms from bhavang. Actually, yeah, we come across the nominative very often. Bhavantang is also very common. Like when somebody, a Brahmin, goes for refuge to the Buddha, when a non-Brahmin goes for refuge to the Buddha, he says, ahang. When the Buddhist does so, he says, ahang bhagavantang saranang gacchami. I go for refuge to the Blessed One. But the Brahmins always say, or generally say, ahang bhavantang gotamang saranang gacchami. I go for refuge to the Honorable Gotama. And then the genitive dative, boto, very common. Instrumental, bota, I guess one finds that. Then plural forms, yeah, one finds both bhavanto and bhonto. Bhonto is actually quite very common. What happens in Pali very often is that the sound of a gets collapsed into the sound O. So, for example, in Sanskrit, one says bhavati, so we have ava. In Pali, it turns into hoti. The A-V-A collapses into O, and then the B sound, I guess through frequent usage, somehow turns into a H. So we have Hoti instead of Bhavati.
Does Bhavana also derive from this root? Or?
The word Bhavana. Yeah, Bhavana is from the causative form. Bhavati means to exist, to be. And so the verb Bhaveti means to bring into being or to develop. And so it's Bhavana means bringing, literally, it's bringing into being or developing. Okay, so you just have to get, it's good to get familiar. You don't have to memorize, but get familiar with these forms for Bhavan. Because as you'll see when you read suttas, you come across them very often. When the Brahmins are referring to each other, they use also this Bhavan. And then when one is referring to a group of Brahmins, it would be like Bhavanto or Bhonto. Okay, now we come to another class of nouns. This is a group of nouns which was absorbed into Pali from Vedic Sanskrit. And in Vedic Sanskrit, this class of nouns ends in A-S. And so what happens in Pali is that the A-S forms the basis for, especially for the instrumental, dative, genitive, and locative. So they give the example of manas, which means mind. Okay, so in the nominative, accusative, we have mano, or sometimes manang for the accusative. So here the S doesn't appear, but it's the AS which is influencing the formation of the O, or the use of the O for the nominative. But we see that the S is preserved in the genitive dative, where we would have the genitive dative, the usual as manaso, and in the instrumental, where we have manasa with the mind, and in the locative, where we have manasi. We see the locative even preserved in the noun, which usually is translated attention, manasikara, or to pay attention, the verb manasikaroti is literally to do in the mind. And manasikara is literally it's acting in the action in the mind. So those are like the archaic, the old forms, manaso, manasa, manasi. But then in later literature, there's a tendency to turn these nouns like manas into ordinary neuters ending in a short A. And so therefore we have alternatives, genitive dative manasa, instrumental manena, ablative manamha, locative, manamhi, mane, manamhi. Does anybody recall any other nouns of this type that we've had?
Chetas?
Yeah, chetas is one. It doesn't occur on its own as a nominative, but it gets joined quite often to a number of other nouns. So we have like Chaito Vimuti, liberation of mind. Chaito Vimuti. Chaito Kila would be barrenness of mind, sterility of mind. Chaito Vasi, I think, means one who is master of the mind. But we have the, particularly the genitive, chaitaso, and that's of the mind. Chaitaso, I think we have santi, peace of mind. Chaitaso santi. And we have the instrumental chaitasa with the mind. So somebody reads the minds of others, chaitasa, with his own mind. Any other nouns of this class? There's a noun, tejas, which means something like spiritual energy. And also heat. The normal meaning is heat. So we have the Tejo Dhatu, the heat element. And then there's a noun, tapas. Tapas means ascetic practice. Let's see, tapas, Tejas. There are a variety of, a number of others. Any questions? Is this getting torturesome? Okay, then there are some feminine nouns which have their stem forms ending in U. And they give as the example of this the word Dhatu. And they give the declension of it. Again, you just have to get familiar with it by sight. Of course, the word Dhatu is very common. But there are not that many other nouns ending in the short U, which are feminine in gender. Yeah, when you did the Pali Primer, you learned the auris. Remember the auris, which is the past tense. I think at that time I told you that you should learn the auris that she gives, the Lady Silva gives, in the Pali Primer. But when you come to reading suttas, you have to forget what you've learned. Not forget, but you have to learn a lot more about the auris. Because there are actually a variety of auris forms. And she gives, like, what's the classical auris form, according to the Pali grammarians. But there are about the auris. No way to get rid of this.
If you press tools again, it might go away.
Ah, okay, that makes it much easier. There are actually about four classes of, well, he gives three types. One called the radical auris, which means that the out. This is very technical grammatical language. Don't be discouraged by it. But the radical auris means that the auris is formed directly from the root. Another is called the stem or base auris, which means that the auris is formed on the special base, and the other is called the sigmatic auris. And this is distinguished by an S that comes between the root and the personal endings. Okay, it says the radical auris, they say, is not very common. Though there are some examples. Okay, they give some examples. Okay, the stem aorist. This looks like the one that you learned from Lily De Silva, right? Ing, e, imha, ita, ingsu. And then they say the great bulk of primitive verbs. It's very, I guess that means the basic, simple, ordinary verbs form their auris according to the above model. It is therefore extremely common, both with and without, without the augment. You remember the augment? That means that the auris could have the simple letter A in front of it. And if there's a prefix, the augment will come between the prefix and the basic verb itself. Yeah, we also have, besides imha with the short A, we also have the form with the long A, so it could also be pvimha with a long A.
Why is that, Nante? For the reflective, did we cover that?
I don't think we've actually come across this yet. Let's not go into an explanation of it now. Certain forms are not, so they're used more often in verse, occasionally in prose, but they're not so common in Pali. Okay, so the great bulk of verbs form their auris according to this type. And let it be stated once and for all that this augment is of much more frequent occurrence in prose than in poetry. And then in the latter, that's in poetry, whether it appears or not is determined by the meter. You know, if you need an extra short syllable to fit the meter, then you can have the If the short will interfere with the meter, then it's dropped. Okay, so these are some simple examples. We have the verb bhuj means to eat. The stem is bunja. So here we have bunjing, bunji, bunji. Then the plural bunjimha or bunjimha. Second person, plural bunjita. And third person, bunjingsu. Actually, there should be a dot under or above this M. Bunjingsu. And similarly with the verb gum and gachati, meaning to go, we have gaching, then gachi, gachi. Then this is a special case. I think this is more in verse, ganchi, then plural ganchimha or gachimha, gachita, gachingsu. Let's see what they call the sigmatic aorist. So this is formed by inserting an S between the radical vowel, that means the vowel from the root, or the vowel of the base, and then adding the personal endings given above. So let's see what this looks like in practice. Okay, so here there is a verb ha, which means to abandon or to give up. So here, following the, they say, okay, they say that this formation of the aorist is used with roots ending in vowels, and the S is inserted to join the endings to the root or to the base. It will be seen lower down, however, that they are added also to some roots ending in a consonant when the S becomes assimilated to that consonant. Ding de dong? I'm reading, but I don't know what it's saying. I have to say examples. Is there a way to get these two pages facing? So then, then it becomes very small. Oh, I want these people. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, I want to share the screen with them. I'm sorry, I should have realized that. But we don't get those two pages anyway. So let's go back to a single page view. And to increase to, okay, so let's remember this. Okay, this aorist is used with roots ending in vowels, and so the S is inserted to join the endings to the root or to the base. Okay, that's clear enough. It will be seen lower down, however, that they are added also to some roots ending in a consonant when the S becomes assimilated to that consonant. Let's go to examples.
Oh, if you go to Virbante, two-page display.
Yeah.
Instead of enable scrolling, do that, not the first one. instead of single page, go to the, pick the next one, enable scrolling. Yeah. Now you could get the bottom half of the previous page. I don't know whether it's enough.
If I bring the size down, it might get more in. Okay, actually that works. Okay, so here we have a verb ending in the vowel, ha, but this is actually a causative form, hape. Okay, hape is ending in a vowel. So here we put an S in, as they say, and then the ending I, ung, or ing. So we have hapa sing, hape sing. Hape si, hape si. Yeah, so it actually seems like the regular normal aorist, except we're putting an S in. So that we could then join the base, join the endings to the base. Okay, let's take tas, which is ending. They're giving the cause of the form, tase. Tas means to be afraid. Tas, the causative form, taseti, would be to cause fear, to frighten. So here, because we have the base tase, so then we put in the S, and then I am, I, then imha, ita, and ung, rather than ingsu. Here to hape sung rather than hape sing su. Okay, then to steal cho re, it's chur is the root, the base is cho re. So cho re sing, cho re si, cho re si, cho re sim ha, cho re seta. Then either cho re sung or cho re sing su, and then the verb kateti is declined in the same way. But let's not get overloaded with aorists today. Okay, so it's enough to see that. Now this is a type of aorist, what they're giving here, which doesn't fit into those three categories. You see, there are more than three types of aorist. So it seems these seem to be fairly close to yeah, the aorist is really it's litter was it say litter it's a minefield. You just have to be able to recognize them. And when worse comes to worse, the dictionary is very helpful. You just have to be able, when you encounter an aorist, to be able to identify what the normal indicative form of the verb is. Okay, so here is the aorist. This is the sutta-style aorist for the verb. You see, we have the indicative verb pasati, which means to see. But the aorist in Pali is based upon another verbal root, which is dis. So we have the aorist adasang. So it's taking the augment, the A. So we have adasang, that's the first person. Second and third is adasa, saw. Then plural could be adasama or adasamha. The second and third person, or second person will be adasata, and third person, a dasung. Okay, and then there's, this is the usual sutta aorist for the verb gacchati. So, I went, agamang. Then the second, third person, you went or he went, agama, plural, first person. I'm familiar with agamamha, but they also give agamama. Agamama doesn't sound so familiar to me. Then second person, agamata, or agamata. And then the third person, agamung. But you see, there are still more forms according to this.
But Bhante, yeah. Over there, that ta is that stood? 411?
Yeah.
So, but we have attas here as well, no?
Yeah.
Atta is the...
This is also a form. Atasi, I think, is more familiar to me. Yeah, these are not so familiar, I have to say. They can be rarely occurring forms. Okay, with the... Now we come to 7.2. This is what they're calling here the upasankami type. This is the typical auras, the kind that we encountered in the Lily de Silva book, and which is here called the stem auras. This is the stem auras. So here with the verb upasankamati, which means to approach, to go to, we have the first person upasankaming, and then second person, third person, upasankami. Of course, this is very, very common. Almost every sutta which spells out the introduction will have this verb when somebody comes to the Buddha in order to ask about a certain point. Okay, then we have the plural forms, upasankamimha, or upasankamimha. Second person, upasankamita, and then what we meet very often is the third person plural, upasankamingsu. So a group of monks, te bhikkhu bhagavant yena bhagava tain upasan kamingsu. So those monks went to where the Blessed One was. Okay, then it says, I'm reading under the upasankami box, with these affixes also, an augment A is sometimes prefixed, particularly with shorter stems. So I don't think I've ever seen the augment A with based on upasankami. But well, I guess with shorter stems one will see it. Okay, so this is a good example. Thus, from basati, one speaks, we have a basi, very common. He said. And then when the root already has prefixes, that is, if there's a prefix and then the root, then the augment, when it appears, comes between the prefix and the root. So they give an example. We have the verb pavisati, which means to enter. This has the prefix pa plus the stem, the simple stem, vis. So pavisati is to enter, and if one forms the aorist, you have pavisi, so that A becomes long because the A of pa is joining with the A of the augment, so you get pavisi. I'm trying to think of one. Let's just get. Okay, there is a fairly common verb, adigacchati, which can mean to attain, to achieve, to find. Okay, now if we're going to put, when it forms the aorist, it, usually it has the augment. Anybody want to guess what it will look like with the augment? This is pretty tricky.
Abhigami?
It has the augment. So you have to figure what's going to happen when you put in the augment.
Between the Adi and the Gachati would be an A?
Yeah. Now, what's going to happen? You're right to that extent. Adi. Oops. Say it loudly. I'm not catching.
I'm just guessing.
How would you spell it? No, there's no H at the beginning. I told you. Yeah, I think Suki has this on the right track. Again, say it.
Acha.
Right.
J-J-A.
You see what happens when you have adi plus A, the I and the A don't like each other in a sense. They don't get along so well. So first the Y, the I turns to an A. So you get adyagachi, but tia, it's a hard sound to enunciate. So what happens in Pali is that the dhy turns into jjh, so it become adyagachi, adyagachi, adyagachi. I think it actually becomes, this aorist I think actually becomes ajagami. I think it's actually ajagami. Let me just see. Well, we find Ajagachi in the Jatakas, but there's another form that I was thinking. Let's see. Yeah, here the Buddha is speaking, actually he's speaking about his own experience, so he's saying that in this sentence, yo rupasa asado tad ajigamang. So yo goes with asado, that which is the enjoyment. Rupa, of course, is form. So that which is the enjoyment of form or the satisfaction in form. Here it would be the tongue, but then the tongue, to make it smooth, pronunciation gets joined, turns into tud, and then we have ajagamang. Ajagamang means I found, I achieved that. Yeah, actually we get many forms like this. Ajagamang, that would be I found. Ajagamangsu, they found. Ajagamanti, that's probably just commenting, yeah, commenting on it. Ajagamma, this would be, I guess, third person. Ajagamasi, you found. Ajagamming, another aorist. I found. Ajagamung, an aorist, they found. Okay, I just wanted to give some examples.
Bant, could you show that how the word evolved again in the word file? You had it printed, typed. Oh, there you go, that one. Good.
Yeah. Yeah, so what happens, not only with this word, but it's a sort of a general rule that when an I is followed by an A because of some formation, then the I turns into, it turns into a Y, so you get, in this case, adya, but the D-H-Y-A, it doesn't remain in Pali, but to make it smoother to articulate, it turns into Ajja. Ajja. A simile similar to with T-Y-A doesn't stand, but that will turn into paticca. Okay, was your head spinning? No?
Yeah. Now I know why it's better to be in the present moment.
Like it's intense.
Because you don't have to use auras.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's intense, but it's like, how else are we going to know it?
Shall we do some reading? Okay. Okay, so we'll resume with Ati next time. Okay, so now we go up to page 77. Okay, I'll recite. Oh, you want to take a little break?
Yes.
Okay, let's see. It's 2:16. So we'll give 10 minutes. 2:26.